Well, welcome to Tiger Bay. I'm Dr. Carol Mickett. A panel that we put together called Business, Politics, and Community. For those of you who don't know me, I am the owner of a business called Mickett Stackhouse Studio, and I collaborate with Robert Stackhouse, who's sitting over there. And we make art that shapes and explores the identity of place. And in that vein, I used to do a program at the Dalí Museum called Our Town, where I had a public conversation with people who helped to shape the identity of St. Petersburg. So today's panel is in a similar vein. We have three business people who have been involved in politics and community and are involved in different diverse aspects of business in St. Petersburg and in the county. So we're going to begin by each person introducing themselves, saying their name, where they work, what they do at their work, and what your business actually does. So let's start with Jim.
Jim Donatelli, and I'm the market president for Regions Bank, and I run all of Pinellas and Pasco counties. I live here in St. Petersburg. My office is at the corner of Central and Fifth, and like the name Regions Bank says, you can sort of tell what I do. Anything else?
That was too easy. Hi, I'm Leslie Curran, and I am the owner of Articles Gallery on Central Avenue and also the Leslie Curran Gallery. And I represent a stable of about 25 artists, sell art and do custom framing, and have been on Central Avenue for about 15 years.
You all have the easy ones. My business might take a little longer.
My name's
Kyle Taylor. I'm the founder and CEO of The Penny Hoarder. We are one of the largest personal finance websites in the country, and we are a media company. We share inspiring stories every day about people who are making and saving extra money. And we employ 52 folks here in St. Petersburg. And I'm proud to say we were just recently ranked the 32nd fastest growing business in America.
So you've told us what you do in your business. Now, I'd like each of you to just mention what you do in the community, either in the community or in politics. So Kyle, we're going to start with you.
Sure. So before I worked on the Penny Hoarder, I worked on political campaigns for 7 years. I worked on behalf of the AFL-CIO and Clean Water Action as a community organizer and a field director. So that role took me all over the country, essentially moving every 3 or 4 weeks to a new state. And I only recently moved back to St. Petersburg 2 years ago. So I'm just getting my foothold back in the community. And as Carol knows, I've been busy growing the business the last year and a half, but my hope is this next year or so to do a whole lot more.
Community-wise, I think I've been involved in things since 1989, which was actually the first year that I served on St. Pete City Council, and served four terms. I have to look over at her to see exactly how long I was there. Total was 16 years on City Council, and I'm still active in a lot of community endeavors. I'm the Vice President of Creative Pinellas, the President of the Edge Business District, involved with a simple theater at Eckerd College, and a number of other boards in the organization. First Night, good Lord, almost forgot that, which is coming up. December 31st, our 24th annual First Night. You can purchase your buttons now. If you cannot go to the event, the money that from the purchase or the sale of the buttons goes to producing the event next year. Thank you, Hal, for reminding me about that.
Very nice plug. Let's see, I was born originally and grew up in Western Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh to be exact. And out of college, I spent about 2 years in politics, where I did staff work for a congressman who was also running for his first re-election campaign, later went on to become a U.S. senator, so that's my political experience. And then I've really been around politics is in my time when I'm leading in the community. I've lived here for about 4 years. First year I did nothing because the job required me to be internally focused. And the last 3 years I've been very involved with the St. Petersburg Area Chamber of Commerce. I'm actually the incoming chair there.
So these are three very active people. Their businesses are booming. And they've all engaged in the community and in some way in politics. Now, Tiger Bay focuses pretty much on politics, political people, public interest, public issues. But it's clear that although the political realm helps to shape our city, businesses and business leaders help to shape our city. So I'd like to hear from each of you together, or whenever, whoever wants to talk, about how you see business shaping St. Pete, our county, the state, the region, and whoever wants to start. Let's let Leslie start.
Thank you. Well, I think, of course, business and politics is extremely interactive. I don't think people think it's just the politicians sometimes, maybe your council, your mayor, whatever, that shape the city, but it's really not. It's the combination of business, individuals, and the politicians, the elected representatives, the ones that you choose to take your wishes forward. So I think especially in St. Petersburg, as council member, I had to be very much aware of the business aspect and what was necessary for businesses to, number one, attract more businesses to this community, to make sure that the businesses we already have grow and have what they need, but also to realize one of the things that was the most important for businesses is for government to stay out of their business. So I think we can be there for them. I know what I expect as a business owner. I expect the city to provide a safe environment, to make sure that we have an infrastructure that's up to par, to make sure that the environment around my building, if I'm in a standing building, is clean and safe. So there are things that I feel as a taxpayer is responsibility of the city to do. As far as that, it's my responsibility as a business owner to run the business in a professional manner that keeps it moving into the future.
Yeah, I echo those sentiments completely. We were talking a little bit earlier about when people say, what do you think the city can do to help your business? And my answer was, stay out of my way. I will figure out the business side of things. I will figure out how to make it work and how to employ people. I do think there are a lot of things that the city can do as far as economic development. We face a couple of challenges right now. One is office space. There isn't enough of it. We've had a real challenge finding a space to house all of our employees for next year. And the other is on a recruiting side, we are often hiring a lot of developers and writers. And one of the things that they always say to us when we're hiring from New York or LA is, the Penny Hoarder sounds great. I would love to work for you, but what's next? What other? If I were to move to St. Petersburg, what other large businesses are in town? And I think that's largely a way that millennials think, in that they're only staying on a job for 4 to 5 years before moving on to something else. And so they want to see that there's a path forward to other companies. So if I could choose, I would love to see some really large tech companies in town. Even competitors of mine would be helpful to me because it will allow for that kind of environment to foster.
You mean you could steal their employees?
Yes, Jim.
That is a recruiting tactic. You know, it's funny. So politics, business, community, I don't see the things as three separate things. I believe very much in connectivity and connectedness. And they all have to work in conjunction with each other. You hear a lot about people talking about how do you improve a community. It's through public and private partnerships, right? It's that collaboration that takes place in those spaces and those relationships that help move a community forward. This sense of place, it's hard to put your finger on just one thing that creates it. And I don't think anyone can. I don't think any one person can, or one group can take credit for it. It's this great stew or soup that comes together to make St. Petersburg, and we all have a role in making that soup.
So maybe you remember when Scott Wagman was running for mayor, and one of the things he put forth as why he was most qualified was that he was a successful businessman and that he would be the best person to run the city. We've also seen that in our national election, that one of the things that happened this year in our election for president was that there was an emphasis on a businessman would be good to run our country. So I'd like to ask the three of you, since you are successful businessmen and women, what you think about that, what you think about having a business person run a country or a mayor or the county.
Yeah, well, I think being a business person doesn't necessarily mean that you'll do a poor job in government, but I do think they are very different. And a business's job is to make as many efficiencies as possible. And frankly, part of our role is, you know, even when it comes to hiring, is to pay the least amount possible to maximize profit for our shareholders. And I don't think that's necessarily a way to run government. Government needs to think about the broader populace, and not necessarily, maybe those business skills will play into cutting deals, as President-elect says, but I don't think that experience necessarily helps when it comes to making sure everybody is included in the room, when it comes to making sure we have a higher minimum wage, things like healthcare. Business wants to eliminate those costs, and I don't know if that's a good thing for government.
You know, when I hear that, I think, what do they mean by business person, right? They're really, I think they're referencing skill set. Mm-hmm. And so what are those skill sets, right? It's, can you create a vision? Can you build process and structure to accomplish that vision? Can you create engagement amongst the organization that you're running? And if you're in government, frankly, that's a government and it's a community. And by the way, this thing that people refer to as bureaucracy, which we hear oftentimes show up in government, it can show up in corporate America too. And so when you see that, in my opinion, that's business skill set that is failing no matter what the arena is. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of process this whole thing as people are just tired of bureaucracy getting in the way. And maybe that's not the right take, but that's how I'm hearing.
Well, I think that's a good point. I tend to agree with that. I think being a business person certainly would be a help if you're going to run for any type of office. I think it's always good to have had some of that type of experience, but I absolutely don't think it's the only criteria that you should base your choice on who you would choose to run a city. When you talk about business, I know every day my goal, I represent artists, I want to make them successful with the product that they create. I want to make sure that my employees get paid a decent wage. I want to produce a good product. But the end result is I want to make money. That's my goal of having a business. And I feel that I will be a success if I make money, which will allow me to continue on and grow. And with that growth comes the opportunity to help your community, to give to others in the community, to support some of those artistic endeavors that people have that they really can't afford. But because I've made smart decisions in my business venture, I am allowed and have the opportunity to do that. But the bottom line is, my goal is to make money to see tomorrow.
One of the things that I remember talking to Scott Wagman about was the transition that he had to make from being a CEO, a president of a company, where he made all the decisions, to thinking about being a mayor, where he couldn't really do that. So, yes, so Leslie, go right ahead.
That's a really good point, because whether you have a strong mayor or not, when I first started on council, we had the city manager form of government. We then changed to a strong mayor form of government. Then after a while, we had a really strong mayor. Now today, still with a strong mayor form of government, but my observation is that there is not that sharing of idea, vision, and all that with the other side, which would be the city council. And I think in any city, it's really necessary to have a stronger interaction with the people who are elected by the same individuals that choose the mayor to also have a voice in the future of their city. So I do think it is a little different than being a CEO of the corporation where you really make the best decisions for your stockholders and employees. But on the other hand, as a mayor, you really need to work with your elected council members to make sure that together the city moves forward for what's best for everyone.
That strong mayor concept, that gets kicked around in a lot of different communities. And I sort of chuckle at times because really what you're doing is you're trying to create an organizational design or structure to fill a void where leadership is lacking. And you'll see in corporate America, people have position power. And you can interpret that as, you need to do this because I'm in this role and I said so. And those people don't last very long in corporate America because you can't force people to do things. You have to inspire them to do things.
Yeah, I'll just add to that, that setting up a business where the CEO is making all of the decisions is probably not a good idea either. Maybe that is a way of business that is changing a little bit, but what I see from my employees is they all want to be empowered in some way. They all want to have a piece of something that they're making, have decision power over. And I also find that I don't have a monopoly on all of the good ideas. There are great ideas that come from everybody in our company, including the interns. And I think taking that to a city government point of view is really important that we have a city council and a mayor that can complement each other and work together rather than one that holds all of the power.
You know, that leader being able to create an environment where you can bring those ideas out.
Yes.
Key.
So when we think about this cooperative form of government and thinking about business in that way, there are also other organizations that have a big say in the city, like the chamber. So, Jim, since you're the incoming chair of the board, what actually does a Chamber of Commerce do, and why do we want one?
Okay, I'm going to leave now. I chuckle because Carol knows this. Originally, when I was asked to be on this panel, it was to represent Regions as a business in the community, but in our discussions prior to this event, Carol keeps coming back to the chamber, but you know, it's funny. Let's talk about chambers by and large. That model for a chamber is changing just like everything else in the world today. And some of the things that they used to do, you think about chambers doing a lot of networking. Do you really need that as much when you've got, I can network right here on my phone, right? So all of that is evolving. And we focus in the chamber on trying to be the voice of the business community inside of this greater community. And it gets really blurry on where do you separate the business community from this greater community. But we feel that if we can help the businesses here be healthy, that's our role in helping the communities.
But don't you also have actions that you do and projects that you help to shape the city?
Yes.
So how does that work?
Oh, yes, you do. we haven't socialized this. When I say we, meaning the chamber and the other community organizations that were involved in it, and we're going to do this in 2017. But we felt like there was a void in our community, and here's how we sensed it. And the void was too many people were coming up to members of the chamber and saying, no one is looking at St. Petersburg like it's St. Petersburg, Inc., and how all the pieces fit together, and are we moving it into a direction that we're all bought into? And I was like, you know what? You're right. And a lot of people had that view. So we went out and raised money, put Chamber's money into this. We called in a consulting group that helps develop community.
Okay. And it was really surprising to me that it was nothing like what I had imagined. But I do think it's important, with all of the progress that's been made, that we never get complacent when it comes to encouraging diversity. And diversity comes in a lot of different forms. It's, obviously, we want to encourage more women and people of color, but I think we also want to encourage more young people to be involved, and we want to encourage even our employees and working folks to have a voice at the table. And that work never ends, and no organization is perfect there, mine included. We all have different recruiting challenges. I was telling Jim the other day that we just hired our first dad, and it and I couldn't be more proud, because we tend to skew young female, and we've had a really difficult time hiring men. And so I was so proud of the fact that we finally have a dad on staff who can write about fatherhood and personal finance. And so I think every organization needs to take a deep look at where they're weak, where they need to do some outreach. And it's not just about being accepting to other folks. It's about actually going to those communities and really making an effort to ask them to join. I think that's really what makes the difference.
Yeah. Can you tell me about time?
Of course.
Okay. So let's start taking questions, and we'll weave what I want to ask with what other people are going to ask. And yes, Corey?
She always asks the question.
Be nice, Corey. Be nice.
I know.
Hi, I'm Corey Adler. I'm the executive director of an organization that deals with diversity every day. And so, Kyle, just so you know, South San Diego has great opportunities for businesses to move in.
Let's chat afterwards.
Okay. And so, when we're talking about our community, there's a lot of amazing things. The last 20 years I've been here, I've seen wonderful things happen. But what I'm not hearing, and I would love to hear, is what your thoughts are about the inequities in our community and how we can purposefully and intentionally include, for instance, South San Diego in the plans that are being made and moving forward and hiring practices and all of that. So I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Jim, you want to pick?
You want that from me or from Kyle?
All of us.
Corey, I feel kind of funny talking about this because of some of the discussions that we've already had, but you know, the organization that you represent is doing some wonderful work, and I think we need to make sure that we listen to the work that the members of the 2020 plan are doing. And that really speaks to a broader piece, is we need to listen to everyone in the community. This is an issue not only for St. Petersburg, but it's an issue around our country. And you know, I get kind of aspirational at times and think, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could figure out how to crack the code here in St. Petersburg? So like anything, you have to have a vision that stretches you, and I think we have that through the 2020 plan. And then the next step is you've got to have collaboration to figure out how to do it.
Could you speak to what actually Regions Bank, do they do anything to address this issue?
In this market, or just?
Here, in St. Petersburg.
So to this day, we do multiple things, and I'll just say Corey and I are in discussion to figure out what is the best way for regions to participate with the 2020 plan, and that will happen. But one of the things that I'm most proud of is an organization that some of you in this room are involved in, and that's Academy Prep. It's a great, great school. We donate money there. We donate time there. I hope I can say this without offending anybody. We bank that organization. And whenever a new class comes in the fifth grade, each one of those classes are given a mentor from Regions that comes to visit them until they go, it's on a regular basis until they graduate in the eighth grade. And if you look at that, we're benefiting from a banking perspective. The organization is benefiting because of the resources and banking advice that we give them. But the community is benefiting because we are raising all of those ships. And I was just telling Linda before our meeting that we're really proud to say that we've actually hired the first Academy Prep graduate in our organization at Regions. And we want to do that over and over.
Who else has a question? Willie?
Willie Rudesky. all businesses need are customers. And Kyle, you're online, so you're not quite as affected, but you're affected from the standpoint of your employees. Getting people to your businesses can be a challenge. What can the business community do to foster better regional transportation, public transportation?
You want to go first on that?
Well, as you may be aware, as a council member, there were certain initiatives that I supported that have failed in the past. We're currently, for 3 years now, maybe more, been working on the BRT, the bus rapid transit that's supposed to help out. We haven't gotten anywhere with that. For some reason, this community seems to just get to a certain point and then there it goes. It dies. Nothing seems to happen. One of the, I feel like I should be able to give the Jeff Danner transportation speech by now. But the second busiest route in PSTA is the Central Avenue trolley, which goes up and out from Williams Park to Paso Grill. And one of the funny things about that line is Bruno, who owns the Hurricane restaurant to begin with, was adamantly opposed to that line because he did not want, quote, the individuals from Williams Park winding up out at the Hurricane on Paso Grill. Well, give it 6 months' time, and then you saw the Hurricane plastered all over the trolleys for advertising because he realized what a benefit it was. And it's not just for tourists, it's for workers, it's for residents. So I think we really need to take note that this is something we're going to have to continue working toward. And now we've got the bike share program, and we're doing those type of things. But I laugh every time I see all the bike racks and think, does the city think it's just individuals that are walking from somewhere to get a bike? Where are the parking garages? We have some extreme parking problems in this city with parking study after parking study being done, stating that issue, and yet we encourage almost driving, because if there was just a place to park your car and walk, not just off a beach drive, it would really alleviate a lot of the problem and lead toward hopefully better, more thoughtful transportation.
Can I say something? Can I say something about that too? As you say, all of my customers are online, but I can't talk about it from an employee perspective because it has been a real pain point. We just moved from the 600 block of Central and had to set an alarm every 2 hours so everyone could go move their cars. There's no parking came with that building. And I think as business owners and city officials, we need to be thinking not just about parking, but what is going to happen 10, 15, 20 years from now. I have a little 2-year-old nephew, and his mom and I were talking about the other day. I said, it's kind of strange to think about that he'll probably never drive a car. Mm-hmm. He'll never drive a car. And I think as a city, we need to be ready for that, because that is coming, and it is coming Absolutely. Very fast.
Todd?
Questions for Mr. Taylor. I've been picking up you for the same generation.
You have to say your name.
Oh, Todd Jennings, sorry. You're a young entrepreneur. I hear all the time from folks at Clearwater and St. Pete at the county level that we need more to attract young entrepreneurs, bringing them to business in the community. As it stands today, what do you think our community government does right? What do you think we're doing wrong to attract more young entrepreneurs?
Good question, Jim. Well, I will say I was really pleased to see in the paper the other day about the new innovation center. What's the word I'm trying to think of?
Incubator.
Thank you. I think that's a really positive thing. I think that the city is thinking. I do think, as I mentioned in my opening comments, that it's not just supporting young entrepreneurs, but bringing in existing young entrepreneurs. And other cities like Austin that have done a really great job of getting Facebook to set up a satellite office there have worked really hard on ad campaigns out in Silicon Valley, out in New York, and I would love to see St. Petersburg do more of that.
I know right where you can do that.
I think the one thing that we keep kind of tiptoeing around, whether we're trying to recruit employees, grow businesses, continue the lifestyle, the quality of life that we have, is our education system. Mm-hmm. I mean, bottom line, it sucks. I mean, there's no other word for it, except for Academy Prep, which when you said that, I thought, that is absolutely fabulous. What's a shame for all of those around there that have to go to Campbell Park, Johns Hopkins, Fairmont Park. I mean, there are a number of them that need our help. And if that means, I'll state from the beginning, my kids always went to Catholic school. But while they were in Catholic school, I still paid taxes that went to the public school system. And I till the day I die, will support public schools, because that's what I want in this community, an educated community. And we really have to start focusing on that. If it means bringing in counselors, whatever else that everybody thinks the family should be doing, obviously there's a breakdown in the family unit, and if that means bringing that portion into the public school, especially at the elementary level, that's what we need to do, and that will help attract business.
I think the question was, what is the government doing well, or what could they continue to do to entice more entrepreneurship? This world has changed, and it's all about creating a sense of place where people want to live, work, and play. And we've done a lot on the live and the play part, and we probably need to do a lot more on the work part. Education is part of it. That really is another way of saying workforce development. So we've got to make sure that the place is fun to live, work, and play. We've got to make sure that the workforce is strong, right, through education. And then the last thing is kind of simple, but we got to make sure that the regulations that we have in place that govern our businesses aren't onerous.
Well, that's a question.
Y'all agree.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Myla. I founded the Old Southeast Community Garden, and my question is to the gentleman from the chamber.
Thanks, Carol.
It's not for region.
Not a business. In fact, our garden is a 501c3. There are other community gardens in St. Petersburg. Is there any way for the chamber to work to integrate the importance of community gardens and the benefits of community gardens to the entire community? How can we work together to get the word out?
Everyone, take this one.
Yeah, I'm involved with the Edible Peace Patch Project, so we do educational gardens in Title I schools on the south side, and our goal is to do all 42 Title I schools in Pinellas County. So there's been an urban farm movement in St. Petersburg, and it's being organized. USFSP has a new organization that it's called Open, that has done a whole bringing together urban farm in St. Petersburg, and that's going to grow. And if you give me your name, I'll put you on that list. And I think that there's a grand recognition of the importance of green space, of using gardens to teach math, science, and reading, and the importance of integrating that into the scape of St. Petersburg in the new plan for the Deuces and the Art Warehouse District. I've spoken to Peter, who's the overseer in redeveloping that, of thinking about putting green spaces in places in those neighborhoods. So I think there's a big movement. I know your garden because I live there. So, and I think we're gonna see that more and more, that we need not only for healthy eating and well-being, but to learn again how we can do what we need to sustain ourselves by ourselves. So talk to me and I'll put you on that list.
Can I just add to that? I think it plays in so nicely what we were just talking about with education. I'm not a teacher, but what I hear from my teacher friends is that it's impossible to teach a child when they're hungry. And I love what the Edible Peace Patch is doing, because we have too many food scarce communities in Pinellas County, and I think adding food right to the school is such a wonderful thing.
So that's another way to help shape the community, and I have to say that Kyle's company gave a generous donation to the Edible Peace Patch. So, I mean, businesses can be philanthropists, and philanthropists help to shape a community as much as businesses and government. Yes, sir.
Okay. We've talked about this before, but Herb Hay here in St. Petersburg. During my career, I traveled cities, and I had certain markers, maybe it's just me, that would measure kinder, gentler communities. And I have to say, our bus stops are probably the most uninviting in America. 97 degrees in the shade. There isn't even a cement, there's just a sign. Usually turned away from it. And that's how I feel about people who don't have lives, they have cars. We change it.
Go ahead. Oh. If you're speaking specifically about bus stops, I agree with you. And what's funny is going back to 1989, every few years you hear the big idea come forward, we can beautify this bus stop, have a shelter. Herb knows about this. It'll be beautiful as long as we'll get them for free if we put advertising on them. So since 1989, everyone, thank goodness, has said, no, 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 because we're not going to give up, you know, the spot for advertising for whatever on shelters. We did come up with a project a couple of years ago that was going to be Central Avenue Art in Transit. So we had an incredible plan that was approved, went through the whole design panel committee, a winner was chosen.
It was moving. Carol Mickett and
Carol
Robert Stackhouse.
We were moving forward with it. Kind of sounds like another project we did, but I won't mention that one. And it's right now floundering, to say the least. So here's something that, instead of every bus stop being a dolphin, a pineapple, some fish, something else that you see in other communities, we were going to use the artistic talent that we have and do a world-class design on these bus shelters and monuments to identify the art in transit and our public transportation system on Central Avenue. It's hopefully we'll move forward.
Well, that floundering fish may breathe again. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. It's just fun.
I have a question for Councilman Hurley. If you want to make money in your business, how do you reconcile the call for raising the minimum wage up to $15, providing health insurance and all sorts of other insurance, and can you still make money? And how much money do you want to make? Do you want to make 5%, 10, 15, or do you want to make, you know, just any other dollar? So thank you.
Well, obviously, I don't want to just make a penny on the dollar. I want to make enough to support my lifestyle, my employees, to have the same for them. Do I support raising the minimum wage to $15? I'm not so sure I do. What I do want to be able to provide is a fair wage for my employees. Health insurance, I can tell you right now, I do not provide that. I cannot provide that. So, in other words, do I want an overhaul of the system? Well, yes, I do. But for now, I am going to pay a fair wage for what my employees bring to the table and move forward with that. But I do not provide insurance benefits because I cannot do that at this time.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know that $15 is the right number, but I think we desperately need an increase in the minimum wage. And the reason I think that is that, you know, as I said in the beginning, my job as a business owner is to pay the least amount of wages as possible. I mean, I am an altruistic guy, and I want to provide a good living for my employees, but my job is to maximize profits, which is why we need a third party, in this case government, to set a minimum floor that all businesses can compete on. And if that means I have to pay $1.25 for a quarter pounder instead of a dollar, I'm comfortable with that decision. I do think that $15 may be a bridge too high. The ACA, doesn't mandate that we require health insurance for companies with less than 50 employees. That sounds right to me. It's difficult for small businesses to make those decisions. But when you start having a business that's bringing in millions of dollars, I think we do have a larger responsibility to make sure that our employees are earning a fair wage, a livable wage, and I think government has a role there.
Let me just state that I'm not bringing in millions of dollars at this point.
So I think the thing there that I heard the group say is a fair and reasonable profit. All right. How you define that, I think it's going to be up to each business owner. And it's also a little bit about what the market can bear, because people will only pay so much if they don't see the value in it. And it's interesting on minimum wage jobs to me. I mean, who in this room has worked a minimum wage job? Raise your hand at some point in your life. Those are intended to be jobs that you start out in to learn work ethic, to learn how to be a part of a team, to learn skill set. And you're supposed to elevate out of those jobs over time. And I think we have a bigger problem here than just what the dollar amount is that those people are making. It's that too many people are getting stuck in minimum wage earning jobs, and they're not elevating up out. So we've got opportunity as really a nation to improve that.
So unfortunately, we have to stop. But we're fortunate because there's a lot of questions, which means that in the future, we can see more discussion in Tiger Bay about business people, philanthropists, and how they intersect with the political realm in our city, in our town, in our county, in our state. So Jim Donatelli from Regions Bank. Leslie Kern Gallery, and Kyle Taylor from Taylor Media and PennyHoarder.com. And me, Dr. Carol Mickett from Mickett Stackhouse Studio and Tiger Bay.
Carol, thank you.
Thank you so much.
This is our final luncheon broadcast of 2016. We expect the series will begin in 2017 in January with the mayors, Mayor Christman, Buckhorn, and Kretikos appearing on a program early in January. The topic will be the State of the Bay. We'll be announcing that luncheon date soon, and you will hear it live here on RadioSt.Pete.com. All of our Tiger Bay Club luncheons, once they are broadcast live, are available in the archive and widely distributed on social media following the program. That's going to about wrap it up from the Yacht Club today. It's a beautiful weekend coming up. We're going to have temperatures right at about 80 degrees right through Sunday, near zero chance of rain, low humidity. It is just a perfect time of year to be here on the Florida Sun Coast in the Sunshine City and along our Tampa Bay beaches. Coming up tonight, we'll be live from studios in Seminole, Florida. It will be the Marco Radio Happy Hour Show that gets underway at 6 o'clock Eastern Time tonight here on RadioSt.Pete.com. On behalf of Suncoast Tiger Bay, this is Joe Bordeaux saying thanks very much for listening to today's live public affairs broadcast from RadioSt.Pete.com. We return you now to our studio.